What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to Slash Film Daily for September 19th, 2017. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news, including a True Lies TV series reboot. We're going to be talking about the cinema score for Darren Aronofsky's film Mother, the 2017 Emmy Award winners, and The Water Cooler. I'll be talking about Halloween Horror Nights and a secret magic show in Los Angeles. Brad will be talking about a stand-up comedy special that he attended, and Ben will be talking about Delta's in-flight movies, and he has something to say about that. And in our feature presentation, our new writer, Chris Evangelista, is going to be joining us to talk about the films he saw at the Toronto International Film Festival that should be on your radar. I'm Peter Serretta, and with me now are Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Brad Oman.
Hey, how's it going?
Guys, it's Monday. The weekend just happened. I did a lot of stuff. You guys did a lot of stuff. I'll tell you about my weekend. First of all, I went to the Magic Castle, but we're not going to talk more about the Magic Castle. People have heard way too much about the Magic Castle lately. But I did get to go to Halloween Horror Nights, the opening night of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios in Hollywood. And it's always a great time. For those of you who don't know, during Halloween time, the month leading up to Halloween or month and a half leading up to Halloween at this point, right? Universal Studios closes down at night and becomes kind of like this other theme park where it's like a haunted mansion, or I mean like haunted mazes, and you get to go on some of the rides after dark, like Jurassic Park. You get to experience that in the dark, and there's like Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle blaring, and it's a different experience at night during Halloween Horror Nights. One of the great things about Halloween Horror Nights is walking through the park. The park has been transformed. There's like new lighting, set decoration, fog. You know, you'll turn a corner and there'll be like these crazy clowns with chainsaws coming after you out of some fog. So you don't know where you're ever going to encounter these scares. It's always a great time. This year, I want to say that the two best experiences in my mind probably came from they had a maze based on Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, which was really well done. I don't want to say it was scary, but it perfectly put you inside that movie. You got to walk through scenes and, you know, through that that famous hotel, and you know, through the maze at the end, and Jack is coming at you with his axe, and it was, you can see some photos on my Instagram of they knocked it out of the park. And the other big maze that I liked, it didn't seem like a lot of people liked it, but Saw was back with another maze at the Halloween Horror Nights, and it was another one that wasn't like insanely scary. But every room had, like, you know, someone in, like, a torture device. And it was, like, very cleverly created and a lot of production value to it. So you'd see, like, you know, someone being chopped in half and their bodies moving, you know, their the underside of their body is moving while their, you know, top side is moving. So they're using, like, these kind of, like, magic illusion kind of tricks to pull off these scenes. And it was a good time.
Awesome. I've never been.
Yeah, you got to come next. You were on a trip, which we'll talk about in a second. The other thing I wanted to just briefly mention is I saw this magic show in Los Angeles called Seesaw, and it's kind of like this thing you kind of hear about, and you can buy tickets online too. And there's just kind of been this trend in magic the last few years of having these small, intimate performances. And I want to say, like, Helder and Derek Delgadio has kind of started this with I forget what their show was called, but he just did one in and of yourself, directed by Frank Oz, that was great. This one is even smaller and more intimate. It's literally like 23 people around a table, while the magician, this guy named Siegfried Tiber, does magic with cards. Like, he does magic basically for 2 hours with two decks of cards, a little matchbox car, and a book. And that's all the props he uses. And he, you know, it's very small, personal, interactive. Everybody gets called upon and is part of the experience. And it kind of brings you into the mind of a magician. He's very good. He was on Penn & Teller's Fool Us, and he actually fooled Penn & Teller. So he's, you know, one of the select few who actually fooled them. And as great as Siegfried is with magic, he's just, like, a great personality. He's, like, one of those guys that he's instantly your friend. He's charismatic. You're going to enjoy not just watching him perform, but hanging out with him. Because before and after the show, you get to hang out. And, you know, they have alcohol that you can purchase. And you can hang out and talk with him. And it's a discussion all throughout the night. You can, you know, ask him questions about, you know, how he does this, how he became a magician. It's just a great experience. Seeing this magic close up is amazing. And and actually, this place is, like, literally you have to go to, like, this building in the back of a parking lot and through a gate and up a set of stairs. And it's kind of like that kind of trend of you know, bars with hidden entrances and stuff. So you kind of have to know about this. And it's something I would recommend to anybody that's in Los Angeles in the next month. I should say my friend John Armstrong is the artistic director of the show. So that should be disclosed. But I'm a big fan of magic, and I was just blown away by the show. It was incredible. There's, you know, impossibilities happening right in front of your face. In your hands. Cool. Yeah. So Ben, you were on a trip, which we cannot talk about because studio embargoes. Where did you go?
I don't even know if I can say that, Peter, to be honest with you. But I was in the air, let's say. So I traveled by plane, and I flew on Delta. And this is an airline that I've flown on a bunch of different times before, very recently, within the past year or so. And I've noticed something flying on Delta, and I want to throw this out there that, of course, this is, like, a huge first world problem that means nothing in the grand scheme of things, so don't even come at me with complaints about me complaining about this. But I'm super annoyed with Delta because they edit their in-flight movies for content. And I actually wrote an article about this at slashfilm.com that you can read all about it there. But the basic gist of it is me bitching at Delta because other airlines don't do this, but Delta does for some reason. And I was watching Love Actually with my wife because we were flying together recently, and she had never seen the movie. I'm not really a big fan of that film, but I was like, okay, a plane is a good excuse for us to watch this. We're basically trapped in a box in the air, and it's not like we're devoting time that, you know, at home that we could be using to watch anything else. So let's go ahead and watch this. I'll show you this movie and, you know, sort of see if you agree with me that it's not really that great of a film. So we're watching it, and I noticed that one of the subplots in that movie is almost entirely excised from the film, and that's Martin Freeman's character. and what is the actress that he Joanna Page. So Martin Freeman and Joanna Page in Love Actually play characters who fall in love with each other, and they work on a movie set, but like an adult film set. They're like porn actor stand-ins, basically. And Delta, just basically because there's nudity involved in those scenes, they just took those scenes out of the movie. So that really sort of set me off on this whole thing, where, you know, it's one of those things where, like, we, all of us on this podcast, presumably everyone listening to this podcast, watches a lot of movies all the time. And it's not always easy to remember exactly where or under which circumstances you saw a film. So, like, a couple years from now, if that was my first viewing of Love Actually, and I got in a conversation with somebody years later, like, oh yeah, remember Martin Freeman in this movie? I would be like, Martin Freeman's not in that movie. What are you talking about? You know, it's like one of those things where you're not watching the real movie, and it just angers me. So I wrote this whole thing about it. You can read more about the points and the argument that I sort of lay out there. But yeah, I just wanted to sort of, yeah, bitch Delta out for editing their movies, because again, this is not something that every airline does. I've watched unedited movies on airlines before, and they just give a warning at the front of, you know, when you start the movie, like, hey, parental discretion is advised, kind of thing. And that seems like it should be enough, but for Delta, apparently it's not.
And even if that wasn't enough, why not, like, I mean, I'm not condoning this, but why not show the scene and blur it out or something?
Yeah, sure. Even that would be better than, yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Not condoning that, but it's better than just cutting it out entirely.
Well, question, was this the kind of movie where they're showing it to everybody on the plane, or you?
No.
Okay.
No, yeah, individual seat backs.
Okay, yeah. See, I can understand that if it was like the movie that they were showing to everybody and they had to cut out some stuff. But even then, just choose not to show that movie.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then Brad, you went and saw a stand-up comedy special over the weekend. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I did. I went down to Indianapolis to Butler University to see Mike Birbiglia. He is currently touring with his new stand-up special. I believe he just started not too long ago, actually. This is one of the earlier stops on the tour.
Actually, you should tell people who he is in case they don't know.
I was just going to, Peter. So Mike Birbiglia he's been a comedian for a while now. He has several specials on Netflix. I know what I should have said was Nothing is on there. And then he has two Netflix exclusive specials. One's called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend and Thank God for Jokes. But he also directed the movie Sleepwalk With Me, which he stars in and is also based on his life and this real life ailment he has, where he sleepwalks and does kind of crazy things. Like, in real life, while he was on tour for stand-up, he threw himself out of a second-story hotel window because he was in his dream, while he was sleepwalking, he thought he was trying to escape from somewhere. And I guess the glass of the window cut him, where he almost cut his femoral artery on his thigh. And if he would have been just like an inch closer, he would have died, essentially. And so he talks about this in his stand-up specials, and it's the entire...
And we should say Sleepwalk With Me, I think, is on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, you know, get your girlfriend, sit on the couch and watch it. It's a great movie.
Yes, it is on Netflix. And then he also directed, more recently, the movie Don't Think Twice, which stars Keegan-Michael Key and a bunch of other great comedians, Gillian Jacobs, and they play an improv troupe, and just how their dynamic works, and each of them trying to, you know, become famous for comedy in their own way and just, you know, do what they want to do. And it's very good. They're funny, but it also has a lot of heart to them as well. So he's absolutely great. And so his new stand-up special, he's just started touring with it. It's called The New One. And it was just a great performance. Mike Birbiglia has evolved so much as a comedian and a storyteller that he's one of the best comedians out there who basically performs a one-man show every time he does a stand-up special. There are a lot of comedians, they wander from bit to bit, and there's not a lot of connective tissue between them. There's, you know, very, very little in the vein of segues, and it's just a lot of it's train of thought, observation kind of stuff. But whenever Mike Birbiglia has done a new special over the past few years, it is always a story. It has a beginning and an ending, and it's like you feel like you're living part of his life, and as like watching his home movies or something. And he's hilarious too. He's so funny, And this new one is just, it's about how he initially he didn't want to have kids, and you know, and he kind of stood his ground for a while. Then eventually he had a kid, and just all the trials and tribulations that came with that. It was such a good show, and yeah, I love Mike Birbiglia, and I was not disappointed by his special.
I'm the type of person who loves stand-up comedy when it is those like one-man show storytelling kind of presentations rather than, you know, joke kind of thing. So I'm gonna have to check out his latest special.
Yeah, I'm not sure when it will be available. So, I'm sure he will be recording it at one of the shows on this tour, but I'm not sure when it'll be out.
Yeah. Over the weekend, news broke that True Lies is going to get a TV series reboot on Fox. Brad, you wrote it up for the site. Why?
I had the exact same question. For years now, everyone has wanted to see True Lies 2, but apparently that will probably never happen for, you know, multiple reasons. James Cameron's making 20 Avatar sequels and Arnold Schwarzenegger's, you know, doing his own thing. At one time, they did try to get a True Lies TV series off the ground back in 2010 at ABC. It was in development and James Cameron was involved, but it never took off. Now, the idea of a True Lies TV series is back. This time, it's in development at Fox. James Cameron is involved again. This time it would be a TV series reboot. It wouldn't be a sequel continuing the story of the original.
James Cameron's involved because he gets a credit and he, like, you know, signs the check when he cashes it.
True. That's very true. So he's the executive producer of this TV series, which basically means he's like, okay, go make this. The other executive producer that has been announced, and unfortunately, to at least to my dismay, I don't know how everybody else feels about this, but it's Terminator Salvation director Mick G.
Yikes.
Yep, he's executive producing, and he's also going to direct the pilot. And this is a pilot that we will see because it's being given a put pilot order, which means that the network in question will play the pilot or else it will have to pay a penalty to the producer. So it sounds like we'll see this at some point, no matter what happens. There is, I guess, some hope in this because it's being scripted by Arrow executive producer Mark Guggenheim, who has done a pretty good job with the DC Comics shows Arrow and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So there's a chance this could be interesting, but I feel like a big part of the appeal of True Lies is Arnold Schwarzenegger in that role. Otherwise, we're just talking about, you know, a suburban couple getting mixed up in spy action, and that's not exactly the most fresh premise. It's something that has been seen several times before in many different iterations. So I don't know. I feel like I would much rather see a True Lies sequel, even with Arnold Schwarzenegger at the age he is, than see just them try to make a TV series out of a property just because it's familiar to everybody.
Brad, you're not excited about John Cena being the spy in this new TV show?
Let's be clear. John Cena is not in talks or anything. However, I can easily see him getting this role and doing something like that.
Yeah, not that I want to defend Mick G in any way, but I should mention that he was the executive producer and director of the pilot for the TV show Chuck, which was very popular. It wasn't something I loved, but it just goes to show he can be involved in a TV show people like. So, yeah. Moving on, let's talk about from something people like to something people hated. Over the weekend, Darren Aronofsky's Mother hit the big screen in wide release, and it got an F on the cinema score, which is, it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. Ben, what do we know about this?
Yeah, so CinemaScore is an audience polling firm that basically collects reactions from people after they walk out of a movie, just to see sort of what the sort of take the temperature of the public at large. Generally, it doesn't exactly represent the film's quality, but it's sort of a good, like a thermometer to see sort of how general audiences are perceiving something, what, you know, studios use it to sort of decide sometimes about what kinds of movies they should make before, you know, next. And also it has a lot to do with like the marketing and stuff. Was this movie marketed correctly? Do people feel like they were misled by the marketing? So that's sort of the idea of CinemaScore as an organization. So yeah, Darren Aronofsky's Mother, which is an extremely polarizing movie. I have not been able to stop thinking about this film since I saw it on Saturday night, and it is it's super interesting. I can see definitely why people walk out of it going, "What the hell did I just watch?" And especially general audiences who may have watched the trailers. What the trailers don't show is what happens in the third act, which is just a complete like.
And you're not going to spoil anything here.
No, I won't. But it's just like a go for broke filmmaking style where everything collapses and chaos reigns to like the ultimate degree. So it's a really crazy movie, but it has a lot going for it as far as what it means and all of the allegories that you can pick out and all this stuff. But anyway, yeah, CinemaScore, it received a rare F, which I think only 12 or 13 movies have received an F since they started doing this. Some of which are Killing Them Softly, The Box from 2009, Wolf Creek, Steven Soderbergh's Solaris. So it's sort of like all over the place with the quality and types of movies that get F ratings. And again, it has a lot to do with marketing, I think. People were not thrilled with Drive, for example, because that movie was marketed as sort of like a Fast and Furious kind of thrill ride action kind of thing. When you actually see Nicholas Winding Refn's movie, it's very much like a dark meditation with Ryan Gosling. It's very slow and sort of a deliberate kind of movie. So it's not exactly what they were marketing, but yeah, Mother, it's getting some pretty insane reactions. I'm sure you guys have seen this, but Paramount, the studio that released it, actually had to release a statement defending the idea that they would release the movie, which I can't remember the last time a major studio put out a statement saying, hey, we stand by the movie that we just released.
Yeah, definitely not on a quality statement. Maybe there might have been like some kind of controversy or, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
some kind of like, you know, there's rape in the movie and they had to come out after the fact or something like that. But I don't think I've ever seen it on the fact of like, you know, this movie's so bad, we're going to have to come out and defend it.
Yeah. And even a lot of the times in the circumstances you were just describing, a lot of times it's like the individual filmmaker or like the producers or something of that movie. This is the studio itself saying, like, yes, we're fine with this movie. The quote, I'll just read it here. It says, "This movie is very audacious and brave. You're talking about a director at the top of his game and an actress at the top of her game." I should mention that Jennifer Lawrence stars in the film. "They made a movie that was intended to be bold. Everyone wants original filmmaking and everyone celebrates Netflix when they tell a story no one else wants to tell. This is our version. We don't want all movies to be safe and it's okay if some people don't like it." So, I mean, I love the sentiment behind that quote. It's just sort of insane to me that we've reached this point because this movie is so divisive that the studio that released it had to come out and basically defend themselves. But yeah, you can read a lot more about Mother on the site. We have a really great spoiler review from Josh Spiegel. We'll link to that in the show notes. And then also Darren Aronofsky basically tells people what the movie is about. And I have a whole article about that that you can read there. We'll link to that in the show notes as well.
And what you mean there is there's some, you know, debate about what the movie means and what happens, right? So yeah,
yes.
So he clarifies that. And that's kind of disappointing because as much as I have not seen this movie yet. I've been too busy going to magic shows and Halloween Horror Nights to see it, but I want to see it. But it's kind of disappointing that the director would come out soon after the film and clarify what it's about, because I kind of like having that discussion and that debate about it.
Yeah, and I think the good thing about the movie, and maybe the best thing about it actually, is that even though Aronofsky might tell you what he was intending to do with it, there are still so many different ways that you can read this film, even beyond his own interpretation, that I feel like the movie works on so many different levels for so many different people in a myriad of ways. So I think even though he came out and basically said, yeah, this is what we're trying to do, I don't think that's going to stifle the conversation around it at all.
That's good. So over the weekend, while we were all doing various things, Brad was at home watching the 2017 Emmy Awards, and he reported on it for the site. So, Brad, for everybody that missed it, who are the big winners? Who are the big losers?
Well, it certainly wasn't the audience, I'll tell you that. No, the Emmys were fine. You know, they are what they are. It's a big, long award show, everybody glad-handing each other, and it was fine. Stephen Colbert was a fun host. He took plenty of jabs at Donald Trump. Sean Spicer showed up, which was both shocking and dumb, because, you know, I don't ever need to see him again unless it's Melissa McCarthy, you know, on Saturday Night Live. But yeah, the awards themselves, there was plenty of awards that went out to a wide variety of talents. This was a big year for women at the Emmys. This was a big year for people of color at the Emmys, and not just in front of the camera as actors and actresses, but also behind the camera as writers and directors. First of all, the top prizes for series, Outstanding Drama went to The Handmaid's Tale, while Outstanding Comedy went to Veep. Personally, that was the major award that I didn't entirely agree with, because I think that while Veep is consistently great and is still very funny, this season is probably the worst that they've had. Even though it's still very good, for Veep, it was one of the worst, and it was not nearly as good as the second season of Master of None or the first season of Atlanta. I would have much rather seen either of those shows take home Outstanding Comedy Series, just simply because Veep has had plenty of time in the spotlight. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, won again this year for Best Actress in a Comedy. So I would have preferred somebody else get some love. The good news is Donald Glover still won Best Actor in a Comedy for Atlanta, which is awesome. He totally deserved that. Master of None didn't go home empty-handed, though, thankfully. They took home Outstanding Writing for a Comedy Series for the Thanksgiving episode, which was co-written by Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe. And Lena Waithe actually became the first black woman to win an Emmy for writing a comedy series. She also happens to be part of the LGBTQ community, which is awesome as well. There was also, aside from people of color and women winning big last night, there was a huge push for, like, people of all genders too. I mean, RuPaul was on the show as the like personification of Emmy. But there was all this love like thrown at shows and stars and talents who all are telling these stories about people from, you know, from the LGBTQ community. And so there's just this, there's a huge, you know, embracing of these stories and from all different walks of life. And so it was a huge diverse year for them. Big Little Lies was a huge winner. It took home awards for Laura Dern and Nicole Kidman on the acting side of things. They also won Best Limited Series. So, yeah, there was a lot to go around. Unfortunately, what I was disappointed to see, even though plenty of worthy shows still won awards last night, I was kind of bummed that Westworld and Stranger Things didn't win anything throughout the entire ceremony. And I think it's that just goes to show you right now in this current political climate we're in, shows that are more relevant and timely and help us cut through all the garbage that's happening right now and kind of lay things out and present themes and ideas that are poignant and powerful are really finding a lot of success right now. And while there are shows like Westworld and Stranger Things are great, there are these, you know, fantastically written escapes that take us to other worlds and have finely tuned characters and phenomenal, you know, philosophy at the center of them. They're just not resonating as much with people right now just because of the way things are going. Stranger Things didn't go home without Emmys completely, though, because they did win some creative arts stuff the previous weekend when those were announced. They won Best Main Title Design and Best Original Theme for a main title, which
well
anyone
deserved.
Yeah, exactly. They're killing it when it comes to that. And Saturday Night Live was a big winner, too, which was great to see as a fan, somebody who reviews every new episode on Slash Film, whether people like it or not. Saturday Night Live won Outstanding Variety Sketch Series. Kate McKinnon won Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy. And Alec Baldwin won Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series. And he had my favorite line of the night, which was, he said, well, I should probably say, Mr. President, here's your Emmy at long last.
Nice.
That's good. Okay, guys, before we go into our feature presentation, I got to say goodbye to both of you. Ben, we can find more of your work, slashfilm.com, at Ben Piers on Twitter. Brad, you can always find at Ethan_Anderton on Twitter, slashfilm.com, and his podcast, Go Flix Yourself, on iTunes. And for our feature presentation, I have a new Slash Film writer, Chris Evangelista, to come on and talk about the best films he saw at the Toronto International Film Festival this year. Chris, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Are you still recovering from the film festival?
I think I'm just over it now, finally. It took like a week when I got there.
So you saw almost a dozen films at Toronto. Is this your first time at Toronto, or have you?
This is my second year. I went last year too.
Second time. What do readers need to look out for? Like, what do people need to be excited for?
Well, Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water is a great movie that I really hope people see, because people didn't go see his last movie, which was Crimson Peak, and I think this is probably his best film. It's gorgeous to look at. It's
emotional. What is this movie about?
It's set during the Cold War, and it's about a mute woman who works as a custodian at this secret government testing ground, I guess it is, testing lab. And they bring in it's like the creature from the Black Lagoon, basically. It's a amphibious man, and the woman and the fish man fall in love. And that sounds kind of out there, but it's played completely straight. Like, it's never like made fun of. It just presented as something completely natural, and that's what sort of makes the film so endearing to watch.
I mean, it sounds like the most Guillermo del Toro film that you could possibly have at the Toronto International Film Festival.
It definitely is, yeah.
How does that rank in the filmography of del Toro? Have you had any time to think about that? Like,
I really think this might be his best movie, honestly. I think it's him taking everything he's basically learned and done as a filmmaker up to this point and employing it to perfection. Like, he has like a complete control over the story here. There's no fat on the story, I guess you could say. It's like a very well thought out, well made movie, and it's probably his best, I would say.
A film I saw at Sundance a couple years ago was this film called Tangerine by this guy named Sean Baker. He filmed it on an iPhone. I was shocked. It was an original vision. It was now he is back with he has a budget this time around. He has some name actors, and it's the Florida Project, which I'm a big fan of Disneyland and Disney World, and that's something. That's what they called Disney World, which Walt Disney called Disney World the Florida Project. So tell me about the Florida Project, because I'm interested to hear about it.
Florida Project is probably my favorite movie I saw at the fest. It blew me away. I mean, like you said, Sean Baker, he made Tangerine, which is a great movie. This is even better. And I mean, it does have a budget, like you said, but it's not like him making like a big blockbuster. It's still very much
I'm just saying he's not shooting this thing with iPhones this time.
No, it's gorgeous to look at too. There's a lot of scenes just set at sunset, and it has that like that Florida sky feel to it, where it's just like that reddish pink hue to it. And Disney actually does play a big part in the story. I don't want to say too much because it's kind of a twist, sort of. So I don't want to give it away, but you always feel the presence of Disney looming over the film, because it's set in this sort of rundown motel right outside of Disney. So it's always like Disney's always like lurking in the background, sort of. But it's a really emotional movie. It's not really big on plot. It's more episodic, which sometimes can be bad, but here it works really well. And Willem Dafoe is in it, and he's so good in this. This is probably my favorite performances of his that I've ever seen. It's a great performance.
What else did you like at Toronto this year?
I really liked Call Me By Your Name, which is it's just a great movie. It's basically, it's set in the 80s in Italy, and it's about this young man, and his father's a archaeologist. and his father gets an assistant who comes to live with them at their villa over the summer, played by Armie Hammer. And they basically fall, the young man and Armie Hammer's character basically just fall in love over this summer. And it's a very like lush sort of film. It just, it feels like summer. It's a very summery movie, and it's very well acted. It's gorgeously directed. That was great. Another film I really liked that took me by surprise was Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, which is about the man who created Wonder Woman and the, certainly for that time, which is, you know, the '50s or.
By the way, it's so perfect that this movie got made when it did, because people might actually watch it now.
Yeah, I really hope they do, because otherwise I don't know if this would be that big. And I hope it, that, you know, because Wonder Woman came out this year, it gives it that push, because it's a, I thought it was going to be, you know, this very standard sort of biopic, but it's not. It's funny. It's charming. It really took me by surprise. Rebecca Hall is phenomenal in it. I think she's one of our most underrated actresses working right now. She was in The Town and The Prestige. And I feel like she's one of those actresses most people don't actually know her name, but she's always great in everything, and she's particularly good in this.
Yeah, she's amazing. That movie comes out in theaters October 13th, I believe. So yes. You'll see that soon. What about the Death of Stalin?
That was great. That was hilarious. That's obviously from the guy who made Veep and In the Loop. And it's set, you know, right after Stalin has died, basically, and it creates this power vacuum in Soviet Russia, and everyone's scrambling to basically fill his place. And I knew it was going to be funny because it's from, you know, the guy who made In the Loop, but it was a lot darker than I thought it was going to be, because, you know, it's obviously, I should have assumed that because it's set, you know, during a very dark time, but it's a lot more violent and disturbing than I was expecting, but it makes it into this sort of very darkly comedic movie. And so that was a nice surprise. It's a very interesting film. I don't know if everyone's going to like it, because it's much darker than it's being sold as.
And there was a couple films that you were disappointed in. I know you weren't loving George Clooney's Suburbicon.
No, I was excited for that. I wanted to see it. I was looking forward to it. It has a great pedigree. It's got a great cast. The Coen brothers co-wrote the script. So I went into it expecting to love it, and it's just a very flat, lifeless movie. It's like two movies jammed together, and neither on their own, either film might have worked, but together they don't work well at all. So, and I normally like George Clooney's directorial efforts. I really liked Good Night and Good Luck. I thought that was an excellent film, but he just doesn't have, I don't want to say skill, but he doesn't have the right eye for this sort of film, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I liked his debut, which was that biopic of, who was it?
Charlie Kaufman. Chuck Barris.
Yeah, Chuck Barris. I loved how stylistic that was.
That was great, yeah. I wish he would do something like that again, but apparently not.
Yeah. Another movie I was looking forward to, I was disappointed to hear is not good, is Alfonso Gomez Rijon's The Current War. He's the guy that did Me, Earl, and The Dying Girl, which I loved. I know it's a very divisive film in the film world. What did you think of this film, The Current War, which also should be said, you know, Tesla, Edison, the war going on there, just a fantastic topic for a movie.
I mean, I did not dislike it as pretty much everyone else I talked to at TIFF hated it with like a passion. I think it's fine. It's not a great movie, but it's not, you know, like the worst thing you're ever going to see. It's entertaining. It's really well directed. It's got a lot of style to it, which I've heard some people say it has too much style, like it's overly stylistic, but I kind of like the style. The performances are good. I mean, Michael Shannon, who is pretty much always great, he's very good playing George Westinghouse. He actually gets to play a nice character for once. He usually plays, you know, creeps and weirdos, but in this, he's pretty much the nicest guy in the movie, and it's fun to watch him play someone nice for a change. Benedict Cumberbatch, he's not doing anything new here. He's once again playing a very smart person who's also a jerk, which seems to be pretty much the only role he likes to play, and he does it well. I mean, you know, he's very good at playing that role, but anyone wishing he would stretch himself a bit, they're not going to get that here.
Yeah, and you have this whole article on SlashFilm.com giving awards to the best performances, best movies, best scenes. I would recommend everybody go to SlashFilm.com and read it. I'll link in the show notes, and there's obviously links in that to all the reviews that you wrote for the site while you were at TIFF. Is there any last thoughts about this year's 2017 Toronto International Film Festival that you'd like to leave us with?
I mean, it's a great fest overall. I wasn't as impressed this year as I was the first year, but that could just be the first year I went. I was so new to it. Everything seemed amazing. Whereas this year, I don't want to say I'm jaded already because it's only been a year, but I wasn't as overly impressed with the films that I would have liked to be. The performances were great. Pretty much across the board, every film I saw had a great performance in it. Just the films themselves weren't as great.
What were some of the films you saw last year that were like the great films of 2016?
I saw Manchester by the Sea last year. That was like the first film I saw. I saw it at 8 a.m. on the first day.
And oh, wow.
It completely blew me away. I was like, oh, my God, is this what the whole festival is going to be like? So, I mean, that sort of set like a precedent for that year. Whereas this year, it just wasn't. I mean, I don't want to say they were bad because they're good movies, especially compared to a lot of the junk that gets pushed out every month. But I was hoping for just a little bit more wow factor than I got.
Sure. I just think generally, like, looking at the list of films that played last year, you know, La La Land, Manchester, it is just a higher pedigree than it seems like this year's. You didn't get to see the new Morgan Spurlock film, did you?
No, I did not have a chance.
No. I'm interested in that. I strangely like his films, even though they're not well reviewed, but for sure. Anyways, you can read this whole thing on SlashFilm.com. Chris, where can we find more of your work online?
I'm pretty much anywhere someone will publish me. I've got stuff cut from film. I've got RogerEbert.com. I have something coming soon from Nerdist. Just, you know, look for me somewhere on the internet and drop me a line and tell me you actually read what I wrote.
and you can find Chris's work now daily on SlashFilm.com. Yes. He's covering the news beat and hopefully bringing his signature style and wit to that.
Yes, I hope so.
You can find more of my work at SlashFilm.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Overcast, Stitcher, all the popular podcast apps. Subscribe. Follow us, you know, give us a review on iTunes, rate us. That helps us out quite a bit, and we will see you tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.